Evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's August 9, 2021, regular city council meeting. You'd all please rise. Short private invocation asking for God's blessing upon this city and for wisdom as the city council makes its decisions tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. I'd like to, on item 1D is a roll call. Wow, Dana.
Sorry.
Councilwoman Quesada, are you present on the go-to meeting?
I am, Tom.
Thank you, Maria. All council members are present except for John Erickson, and he has to be excused tonight.
I'll make a motion to excuse John Erickson.
Second. Motion's been made, seconded to excuse John Erickson from our proceedings tonight. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I'll move now to our approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion. Second.
Motion made by Gina, seconded by Angel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move to our consent agenda. I'll come back.
I'll make the motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. In my haste, I skipped over the citizen input, which is item 1E. Is there any citizens here who would like to address the city council tonight? Yes. Please come to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, and you have up to 5 minutes.
Arthur J. Mendez, Jr., 525 East Cedar Boulevard. I just had a couple of questions regarding the Terry stop. Just to elaborate more on the procedures and what protocol calls for a Terry stop. I just wanted to understand that more so like that I can understand the it doesn't conflict with the Fourth Amendment to each citizen. And that's what I wanted to ask about, please, Chief. Thank you.
Okay, so Chief, were you going to cover that tonight, the Terry stop?
Mayor, I covered that at the last council meeting in pretty good detail. If it's a procedural question or definition question, I would convince Mr. Mendez to come. I can address council if you'd like.
All right. Is there anyone else here tonight who would like to address the city council? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mendez. At the chief's suggestion, if you want to make an appointment with him, he'll clarify those issues for you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to move to our current business tonight, Chicano State Softball Tournament, and we have with us our Park and Rec Coordinator, Madison Martinez. Madison, you want to fill in the council on this event?
Yes. So I'm asking council for a motion to approve the resolution facility use agreement for this tournament. It is put on by Charles Garcia. It's an annual tournament. I believe last year actually was the first year since, I mean, that I can remember that it didn't happen because of COVID. But this is a men's softball tournament. He's asked to rent out the Lions Park facility and the whole park. There's going to be live music. There's going to be a band. There will be softball all weekend. It's going to start on Friday, August 27th, and end on Sunday, the 29th. And nothing will exceed any city ordinances, and Public Works will provide staff throughout the weekend to maintenance fields, to clean up garbage, to just you know, be there for the general upkeep of the whole facility.
Question, City Council?
I just have a comment. One of the things that they're asking for two police officers for 2 days at each, 8 hours each, and two public works employees for 2 days, 8 hours each. The fees that's being charged in there, it comes to a total of $2,140. That doesn't even cover salaries for those employees. And so next year, I'd like to see that taken into account.
So if I may, we actually, well, I wasn't present for the meeting, but the mayor and chief were present for a meeting with Charles. They decided that we're not going to go with two PD officers. Charles said he was going to have security covered. So we're going to go move and hope that he does have it covered. And as far as maintenance and public works, the number that he paid on the check was just over $2,000, and it covers everything that he's renting. But I agree. I would love to meet with council and maybe set some new numbers so that way we can at least start paying maintenance, the work that they're doing for.
Okay. Well, that should have been taken out of here then. But yeah, I wasn't gonna question it this year.
How does he cover security? How do you mean? What do you mean by he'll cover security?
Yeah, if you'd like. Sorry, it's just that I wasn't at that meeting, so okay. I'm not sure the details.
No problem. Mr. Garcia and I actually met and discussed this, and Mayor stepped in quite a lot of detail. We discussed the fact that there are quite a few people there. There have been issues in the past with alcohol. We haven't had fights, but the concern is that, you know, alcohol, hot days, I mean, it could become a problem. So, and that's why we had mentioned early, it's like that they should consider some form of security. We were not encouraging, you know, off-duty police officers to come in. We were encouraging them to find another solution for cost. The solution that we came up with or that we agreed upon this time was that Mr. Garcia would actually have a different color t-shirt with event staff marked on it. He would make it very clear their responsibility was to go around and help make sure that there wasn't alcohol and that people were behaving and call us. We also have his contact information, and he understands if there are problems, this will probably not be the agreement next year.
But if there is problems, like,
we will have on-duty police officers. We won't have anybody permanently at the event. But if there are problems, we've got Mr. Garcia's phone number. They have ours. You know, obviously, we will get there and we'll do our best to resolve what we have.
Good. Okay. Thank you. So with that, I believe Madison is asking us to approve this facility use agreement and the resolution.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Madison.
Thank you.
Our next item on our agenda is the award of the treatment plant for the chlorination-dechlorination project. And City Engineer Sean O'Brien had put that out to bid. The council had authorized that, and so now we have the bids come back, and Sean, you're going to explain this process here.
Yes, so Mayor Council, last Wednesday we had a bid opening. We received four bids for the wastewater treatment plant chlorination dechlorination project. The energy estimate was a little over $492,000. The bids ranged from $532,000 to $740,000. So we did get four bids. The low bid was POW Contracting, which is out of Pasco, Washington. I've worked with them in the past, they're a good contractor. So this project, because we didn't know what the costs were going to be, we've been working with Vrela and then their sub-consultant, Asvelt Engineering, designing this project. We waited to budget, or the funds will have to be in a budget adjustment. So that can either be done now or in the future before we actually start paying the the cost. So it's a little bit different than a normal project where we've had it included in the budget, but there are funds in the sewer fund for this project. So I can answer any questions.
Council. I'm glad we're going. Getting going on it.
Entertain a motion to award the bid then to...
I'll make a motion to award the wastewater treatment plant chlorination dechlorination project to POW Contracting Inc. in the amount of $532,073.50.
Second. Thank you. Before I vote, Spencer, do you want to explain the budget part of this for the council?
As Sean said, we do have the money in the sewer reserve fund. With their approval tonight, we'll just move forward with this as though it's going to be approved. When we start going through our budget, I'll just include this in the budget to include it in the budget.
Okay.
All right. So we have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Council. Thank you, Sean. Now we're going to move to item 4C, which is the law enforcement reform laws. And Chief, this is part two of these legislative changes.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As I spill water all over everything. I'm going to continue where I left off. But before I do you have any questions from last time? Any discussions have come up? Okay, so we've currently briefed all of our department on the primary bills and how they're going to affect us. In fact, today we invited juvenile probation to come and sit in. Last week when we did it, we also had the district court prosecutor present. So we're doing our best to get this out. So as I've said, we've run this by our city attorney. We've run it by fitting it to fit with them, WASPICs, non-legal advice, WCIA's non-legal advice, the legal advice, and then the county prosecutor is also non-legal advice. So our legal has looked at this, and I'm glad he's here, because if I do step off of the my path here, then he can kick me back that way too. So this is one of the other bills that pretty significantly impacts us, 1054. There was some state offsetting money that we've been watching for, and the mayor advised me today. He got an email from the AWC, I believe, on that. Spencer has indicated to me that we received that money. So the state has sent some money to offset some of this, and I'll explain why that is actually relevant and necessary in just a second. Well, I'll explain it right now. As we go through these new rules and tactics, one of them is they've banned chokeholds. Well, I've got no problem banning chokeholds. I've never used a chokehold on anybody in my career. We train our officers to use what's called lateral vascular neck restraints, which are designed to block the two arteries on each side of your neck and cause you to pass out. Generally, if it doesn't work in 30 seconds, it's not going to work, and you abandon it and go to something else. So the idea that you're going to, hold this on somebody's neck for minutes and then, crouch over them for eight more minutes, that isn't what we train our officers. In fact, it's absolutely what we train our officers not to do. But this new law bans chokeholds. Now, in their wording of it, they banned the neck restraints that we also use, which save lives, plain and simple. The LVNR techniques that we've been teaching our officers for years saves lives. Much better to knock somebody out than beat them with a baton or shoot them with your handgun. And yet, the way the new laws are written, we can't use this. We can use our gun easier, which makes no sense, but that is the state of the law, and we will comply with that. I just wanted you to understand that when they say chokeholds, they mean all the techniques that we use, including the LVNR, which we've actually spent quite a bit of money training our officers to use. Now, tear gas, was also a significant topic, obviously, having come out of the riots in Seattle and Portland and looking at the techniques that were used to try to protect the city. Tear gas was addressed that we basically can't use tear gas if, except for three circumstances, one being a riot. But in the event of a riot, which I pray we never have, the new law says that I would actually have to get the highest elected official's permission before we use it. We don't own any tear gas. And we didn't have any intention and don't have any intention of buying any tear gas. But there is a good reason why we would want tear gas. Tear gas is CS gas. So anybody that's been in the military, I've been exposed to it 4 times in the military. I've also been exposed to it as in SWAT trainings and gas trainings and stuff like that. CS gas does not affect dogs. So the reason it was a valuable tool that's mostly gone now is we could introduce it into a building to, and then be able to send a dog in. Where if we introduce pepper spray into a building, we can't send a dog in because the dog would be affected by it. So that's, I believe that's the reason that they address the tear gas is because they don't like the police dogs. But in this case, that's no longer a tool. We could use it for barricaded subjects or hostage situations, which a month or two ago, we actually had a barricaded subject where we called the SWAT team to come down from Grant County. And we didn't use pepper spray. What we ended up using was flashbangs to try to get their attention. He had climbed inside of a couch, so he wasn't about to come out. And in this case, we flew drones in to see if he was inside. They couldn't find him. They took the dog in, couldn't find him. The SWAT officers that finally entered found that he had cut a hole and climbed inside, actually inside of the couch. So in that kind of situation, he couldn't get himself out. They actually had to cut him out of the couch. So in this case, tear gas wouldn't have been a good option anyways, or pepper spray. Now, one of them that significantly affects us is vehicle pursuits. So Washington, it used to be that it was up to each city about how they're going to handle vehicle pursuits. We have a very tight pursuit policy. You have to have a good reason, but now, it's going to be consistent throughout the state. We can only pursue a vehicle when it's a violent felony offense, a sex offense, they've escaped, and the escape that they're referring to here again is much like the escape that we talked about in House Bill 1310. This escape is from a facility or custody. So they're basically in the back of a police car or they're in a jail. And then finally, for reasonable suspicion of a DUI. Now, that's the only Terry condition that we're actually allowed to use force or pursue somebody on. So reasonable suspicion of DUI could be, I mean, let's use a good example. Chelan had a school bus stolen. Chelan terminated that pursuit because they didn't have violent offense, sex offense, escape, or reasonable suspicion of DUI. Just because someone is driving erratically does not mean that they're DUI. It could be a medical condition. So we would have to be able to argue why we think it's a DUI. But in this case, they terminated that pursuit. I think it went all over the place. But the next piece is we then have to look at, okay, so we have a violent offense. We also need to know or not know who they are. So identifying and apprehending the person, and they pose a imminent threat that is greater than the risk of letting them go. And the officers received, this one's important, received authorization to engage in the pursuit from a supervisor. There are times I only have one officer working. What this means is while the officer is pursuing, he's on the phone or having dispatch get on the phone, call a supervisor that's probably being woken up, And hey, he's chasing this person. Can he continue the pursuit? It's absolutely required that the officer get supervisory approval. And the way they worded the bill is every city that has 10 or more sworn officers is required to have a supervisor available for that. So in those, in that circumstance, I mean, let's put it into some scenarios. Say we're standing outside, my police car is sitting beside me and it's running. And while we're talking, I turn my back and somebody jumps in and steals my police car. There's an AR-15 in my police car. There's a rifle in it. We can't chase the car. We're going to have to let the police car go because it's not a violent offense, sex offense, escape, or reasonable, unless I can say I saw him drop a beer can as he's getting in my car, I'm probably not going to be able to argue reasonable suspicion of DUI. Often we'll get a call that somebody's got, I just saw these people break into my house, they're leaving now, this is what they're driving. Well, again, that's reasonable suspicion. It's working towards probable cause, but unless they had a firearm as their, which makes it a first degree burglary, armed burglary, then it's not going to fit at one of these violent offenses. So pursuits are going to be, while they were a very high risk, low frequency incident, they're going to be a very low frequency incident now. Now I want you to keep in mind, almost all traffic stops, in fact, I mean, I'm having a hard time coming up with an example of one that isn't, is a reasonable suspicion stop. It's like, he looks like he's speeding a little bit. Well, that's most often a reasonable suspicion, but it's also not a crime. If they take off, I can't chase them. Well, our policy already said that if it's a minor traffic violation, we're not going to chase them. But think about the burglaries, the the car thefts, those kind of, we see a stolen car in town, we're not going to chase it. So I believe, we're going to comply with that law. Now, so we're working up the policies of all of that. Now, additionally, some of the conditions is we can't shoot at a vehicle. Well, that's been the case for a long time. We don't shoot at moving vehicles unless the vehicle's trying to run us over. The legislature was very clear on that. Unless the vehicle is being used as a weapon against us, we are not to fire upon it. So if the vehicle is just trying to get past me to escape, then I can't engage it with my gun. If they're swerving towards me and trying to hit me, then I would engage them, as long as, if you remember back on 1310, all the conditions I have to go through, de-escalation, backing up, re-engaging, all those kind of things, then in this case, I could engage that vehicle with my gun. But their intent is that we don't. Now, impact-wise, like I said, they're high risk. All of our cars have hit bumpers on them. We have trained our officers, when it's low speed, to pull up, bump the car, spin it, pin it, and arrest the bad guys. So we, in that case, so you'll see those on all of our police cars. Well, as long as they're not in pursuit and they do that quickly, we would be able to do that. If they think it's a pursuit, they're not going to be able to use that technique. All of our cars have stop sticks. So basically in the trunk of every car, we have a device, they pull it out, they throw it across the roadway. It's designed, it always lands with spikes up, designed to pop tires. Well, we're probably not going to use those very often either. So as we get later on and we start talking solutions, you'll hear why I'm recommending to council we buy even more cameras. Because we're going to try to figure out who that person is, so that we can make sure that we're complying with this law. Now, I think the biggest impact here, our citizens are going to get frustrated with us. When they're watching their car get stolen and we have to say, see ya, and watch it drive away because we can't legally pursue it, I believe that's going to cause a little bit of heat on me, but definitely heat on you guys too. So welcome to the fire.
Sir. So you're talking about stolen cars.
Yep.
Blue lights come on. I allegedly have a beer in my car. Allegedly. I don't want to stop.
In that case, I could actually chase you because
I have a beer.
Or if you're swerving like you're drunk.
You don't know I have a beer in my car. And I don't want you to know that I have a beer in my car or a pound of cocaine or a whatever. So I'm not stopping.
Right.
Now what?
Goodbye. Unless it's a violent. Okay. Now, those are the people we don't want to stop. So while the law allows us to pursue people that we reasonably believe are intoxicated, those are the people we want to terminate the pursuit on anyways. Because the last thing I want is a drunk driving 100 miles an hour through town.
Right.
So most of the time, we would have already terminated that pursuit.
So, like, are you going to... So somebody's driving erratically, and you notice that they're... Or you have a reasonable suspicion that they're under the influence. You turn your lights on and they don't stop. But yet they just proceed at a regular rate of speed.
That's very common.
Okay, because a lot of drunk drivers won't even notice that there's somebody behind them.
Or they do, but if they think they can get home, it's home base.
Yeah.
And they're free.
But you can still turn your lights off and follow that individual until you can...
Actually, as long as they're not driving high speed, we're going to continue with our lights on and we're going to keep following them. Pursuit is going to be when we actually believe they're trying to evade us. The drunk driver that's trying to get home often will just keep driving at 30 miles an hour, failing to stop at the stop signs until they get in their driveway and then they try to run to the door. But they usually fall down as soon as they get out. So that is probably going to look much the same. It's and actually, if we're talking the stolen cars and stuff like that, if they're driving 30, 40 miles an hour, we might still use the pit bumpers on them and try to stop it. We may still try to get a car up in front of them and throw spike strips in front to pop their tires. What we can't do is chase them when they're actively evading us. And that's where it gets into that, when is it a pursuit versus it's just someone failing to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things when you actually see it, you can understand see the difference. So I think there's some confusion. Initially, bad guys are trying to decide whether or not they're going to stop. So they're looking for a place to either throw the gut drugs, throw the gun, or jump out of the car and run. They usually don't do it at high speed, but they might slow down to 20, jump out of the car, and the car's driving down by itself. Well, in that case, our priority is let's get the car stopped so it doesn't crash. But the difference between that, I hope I explained that. I mean, I kind of rambled a little bit on that one.
Even if it's a pursuit, on foot, you can't do that either.
Okay, pursuing on foot, a foot chase is going to look different. Foot chases are dangerous. Officers get hurt often chasing people. Now the issue is going to come down to, is it a Terry stop, which we can't use any, we can chase them. We just can't use force to stop them. So Seattle PD had a homicide last week. They published the facts of it. Officer shows up, bad guy's running away. They let him go because they only had reasonable suspicion. The criticism, they also had a dog. But instead of letting the dog chase the bad guy, they said, nope, we don't have probable cause yet. So they let him go. Now the legislators are all saying, well, they could have stopped him. Okay, sir, please stop. Now he runs away. I can't use any force. The problem is, it's like telling a counselor they have to counsel somebody, but they can't talk to them. We have to have the ability to use force if we're going to forcibly stop somebody. Now, often we're able to do it without using force. Terry is not gone. The reasonable suspicion stop is not gone. We are just the only state in our nation that can't use force to temporarily detain somebody.
So if, yeah, so if somebody does not want to comply with your Terry stop, you have no alternative to let them walk away.
The some cities are saying, well, then I'm going to arrest them for obstructing. Any hindering of a law enforcement officer doing his duties is obstructing by definition. The problem is, how do you transition? So as we look at it, in the scenario that I gave you guys last week, if, for example, we show up on a shooting call, there's a person laying on the ground bleeding, and three gang members running from the scene. We don't have probable cause. We have reasonable suspicion one of them was involved, or all of them were involved. But probable cause requires us to believe a specific person did a specific crime, where reasonable suspicion or Terry allowed us to temporarily detain somebody when we suspected they were involved in criminal activity. So not a specific crime and not necessarily a specific person yet. With this new law in this scenario, our officers could, as they're driving up, say, you three, stop. You three, I said, I'm ordering you to stop. Because he has the authority to use Terry to stop them. If they don't stop, he can't just grab onto them. The officer needs to transition it to the next level, which is you're under arrest for obstructing. That's a crime. I have probable cause that they did the crime. So I could then use physical force to stop them for obstructing. Not for the assault where somebody's laying on the ground, but for the obstructing misdemeanor offense. Now, the problem is some cities are saying, yes, that's what we're going to do. Some cities are saying, oh, hell no, we're not going there. That looks too dangerous for us. Now, if you remember how I started the presentation a week ago with the scenario with, you know, eating French fries with my dog, and where the comma goes really matters and how we understand it. As we look at this new law and how the words are used, there is no case law telling us and giving us an explanation of what it means. So what we have to do is try to guess at it until the appellate courts and the Supreme Court weigh in on it and say this is what it actually means. So right now, the risk is if our officers stop and grab somebody, they theoretically could be charged with assault because they didn't have a legal reason to grab that person. If they say, stop, I'm ordering you to stop, you're under arrest for obstructing, and they grab them, now they can argue what their legal reason for stopping there was, so they are covered by the House Bill 1310.
If I drive off, aren't I obstructing?
Theoretically, yes. Mm-hmm. But I could arrest you for it. I can't chase you. So pursuits are still dead unless it's a violent felony or I believe you've been drinking. Now, you say it, most drunks don't want me to know that they're drinking. I've had them throwing their beer cans out the window. So sometimes they don't care. Any other questions? I'll keep going.
Is that going to be a wake-up call, that homicide in Seattle? Is that going to be a wake-up call at all for the legislature?
No. In fact, the ACLU and the legislators are saying that the police department was purposefully misinterpreting what the law says, and we're just being obstructionist.
The Seattle Police Department.
By allowing that guy to escape?
By allowing, they could have chased him. So a couple of the congresspeople, or senator, I think it was the one that sponsored the bill, put out a press release last week. And in that press release, they attached a confidential document, informal opinion from the Attorney General, which is non-binding. It is not a legal document. And in that, they're saying, look, nowhere in House Bill 1310 does it say police officers can't chase somebody. Well, the truth, that is absolutely the truth. House Bill 1310 does not say I can't chase somebody. It just says I can't use force to stop them or what I can do when I catch them. I can't grab them, but I can chase them. Well, why am I going to chase them if I can't grab them? In this case, Seattle police could have chased this guy. They just couldn't have grabbed him. That puts us in a hell of a bind.
What point would that have made?
Okay.
When it wears him out.
Is there any more question? I'm going to keep...
Okay. Falls over.
What are you going to... Okay. You're going to wait for him to say, okay, I give up, I'll put his hands up? But with regard to, you know, somebody stealing a police officer's vehicle and taking off with it, maybe we just need to be smarter in with technology today. The officers could have a device to where if somebody did get into their car...
We could kill it.
You could kill it.
Yep.
Or you have a device
OnStar
where...
OnStar kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you have a device that you carry that locks your car.
Yep.
They'd have to smash the window, and if they did, then you'd be able to stop it.
Yep.
So, do the cars have keys, or do they have key fobs?
Our cars have key fob. Most of the new ones have key fobs. Some of the old ones do not.
So
as we're buying new cars, they have the... I was using that as an example. That is not a big worry of mine, that unless we're following House Bill 1310, where it says we're supposed to keep retreating, and if we're backing up and giving them space until I back away from my car, now they've got my car, then I've got a problem. But that, I mean, I'm using those as examples. Those are some of the extremes of it. But let's face it, extremes happen.
So what it sounds like to me is that there's going to be, you know, law enforcement, you know, city and sheriffs that are going to be out there proving a point by following this law the way they interpret it. And it's going to be, you know, something that this, you know, is going to allow something like what happened in Seattle to happen.
Councilman Lawless, if we don't follow this law, we risk being arrested because we've used force that was not legal. And by definition, not legal is illegal. So using force outside of those the four conditions that House Bill 1310 gave us would be illegal force. So I want to keep my cops out of jail. Additionally, the state peace officer certification, and I think I'm going to get into that in just a second, talks about if we do use force illegally, that's a decertification. Then the Office of Independent Investigation and the state auditor are also going to be looking at those conditions to see if we have violated, to see if we can be decertified. So I'm trying to keep my officers certified, I'm trying to keep my officers from being arrested, and I'm also considering I don't want us sued. But the first two are more important to me than the lawsuit. So
as an officer, you're going to think about it not only twice, three times before you make a move.
Yeah, but just to allow somebody to flee the scene, escape the crime without some sort of tactic to not you know, either surveil that person and know where that person went so that when you do gather the information, that was the person that left the scene, you know?
That's where we're going to be doing the investigations to try to hold people accountable. It's going to... When I said that we're changing, the role of law enforcement with these new bills is going to look different. We are going to be doing much more investigation after the fact to hold people accountable than stopping them in the act or catching them. So where if they've stolen that car and they've taken off, we're going to have to be doing work to arrest them. But it's not going to be right then and there. It's going to be later. So one of the considerations, one of the recommendations, I don't want to give up all of my solutions because that's next week, but we might consider video cameras of our exits to our city so that we can catch a face and a license plate of who's escaping so I know which way they escaped with a vehicle, but I can actually go and try to hold them accountable later. But we won't be able to chase them. I've got a whole lot of material, so let me keep going here, please. So let's keep going. So I gave that example. Gave that one. Oh, domestic violence is going to be one that really kind of sucks. But I gave you that example of the domestic violence call and how the officer can't really force people apart while he or she's investigating it because we're stuck at reasonable suspicion. Well, say the caller calls and says that she was just assaulted or he was just assaulted and the suspect just took off. Well, unless there's a violent felony, so there's broken bones, broken teeth, or permanent disfigurement, which would make it a felony, we can't pursue that vehicle. So unless we're going to camp on that house all night long, bad guy's probably going to come back. So we're going to see more, I believe, significantly more domestic violence out of these laws. And to me, that's extremely unfortunate because we've had really good laws around that over the last few years. No-knock search warrants are gone. That one doesn't affect us. I've done three no-knock search warrants in my entire career, and the tactics have changed. We're not in a hurry to kick in a door and go in and get shot at now. We used to worry about drugs getting flushed. You know, they flush the drugs, they flush the drugs. What we, in this case, I mean, a no-knock search warrant can really put us in some high-risk situations. This is, there's no effect to us on this one. This one significantly affects us, and this is on House Bill 1054, or Senate Bill 1054. It talks about military weapons. Now, most of you, some of you might, most of you in this room don't have military weapons. And most of us would think our police department doesn't either. The problem is, when we talk about how incompetent laws are written, in this case, means firearms and ammunition of 50 cal or greater. That is a 12-gauge shotgun. It is greater than 50 cal. It's a 40-millimeter beanbag round that's designed to knock people down and not kill them. That's illegal by this law. So the impact money that the state has sent us is to help buy new tools. The problem is we're all scrambling trying to figure out what do we buy. Because what council had approved us putting a 40-millimeter launcher in every police car this year. We've been researching it, trying to find the right one to buy. Our goal being, if somebody's coming at me with a knife or standing with a knife or trying to get in the car to get their gun, I can shoot him with the beanbag round, knock him down, go up and handcuff him. Everybody's alive. We don't have that tool. So this is exactly what happened in Kennewick with the woman that slashed 9 police car tires as the police officers tried to stay around her but away from her and created time and distance and all the things that the new law requires. They didn't have anything that wasn't 50 cal or less. I mean, sorry, less than 50 cal. They had to call Pasco police and say, hey, can you guys bring us a pepper ball gun? Because none of our we can't use any of our stuff. Now, we're not heading towards buying 40 millimeter launchers now. We're looking at buying paintball type devices that shoot a little ball using CO2 because it's not a firearm. Because our goal is to take people into custody when we need to without killing them. And yet this law makes that very difficult. So we're looking at much less quality type things. Do I think they'll change this next year? I think they'll probably change this, but we have to get from now until the next end of next legislation. So I'm probably going to end up buying some paintball type deliveries for pepper ball or OC balls or little lead balls designed to try to not kill people. I'm not sure where I'm going to pick up electromagnetic spectrum weapons or give them back.
I was going to ask you what that was.
I also don't have any of these long-range acoustic hailing devices. I'm sure that would be kind of fun in a parade or something. But obviously somebody has a good imagination or bought those. So impact-wise, we're looking for compressed air delivery. One of the issues was that came up in the same bill was officers wearing identification. Now, we would all agree, generally, a police officer should wear identification. It's like, what's your badge number? My name's right here. You don't need my badge number. Just look at my name. The problem is, and what we were seeing with the riots, was the rioters were Googling and finding on social media the police officers on the riot line doxing them, which means they were basically finding out everything about their families. And they were coming up to these officers and saying, hey, is this your wife and kids? It's like, while you're standing here, I'm going to go rape and kill him. Now, in that scenario, I don't think it's fair that we have to identify our officers and make it easy. But that's that law. Duty to intervene. Now, our officers have always been taught they have a duty to intervene. If you see your partner officer using excessive force, stop it now. That's how we train our cops. Now, the problem is, they said shall intervene when in a position to do so, shall render aid, and the impact is here, if you don't, you will be decertified. If you don't report it to your supervisor, you will be decertified. Now, okay, if it's about excessive force, I can get behind that. I don't like it, but I can get behind that. What I can't get behind is this one. Any on-duty police officer who witnesses any wrongdoing by another officer or has good faith, reasonable belief the officer committed wrongdoing shall report such wrongdoing to the witnessing officer, supervisor, or other supervisor. Wrongdoing, by definition, means conduct that is against the law or the witnessing officer agency's policy unless it is de minimis or technical in nature. So, for example, our officer shouldn't park in a fire zone. If they do, is it now illegal not to report it? Yes. If our officers post something on social media that an officer jokes about who he's married to, could that be wrongdoing? Yes, it could. We don't know what the impact is going to be of this yet, but the issue is it's such a catch-all, it could really hurt some officers. Now, if they don't report that wrongdoing, and I don't report it to the state, there's a problem there. So they have, and then they've built in an anti-retaliation clause that if we retaliate, so an officer, if we had, we don't, but if we had a disgruntled officer that wanted to cause problems and starts reporting all of his buddies every day for everything, we can't say stop because that would be retaliation. So I believe officers should report real misconduct. You see a cop steal something, you see a cop lie in court, you see a cop use excessive force, you darn well better report that. Because we don't want that cop working for us. But the problem is it's so poorly and broadly written that I think it's going to be a bigger issue. Now, and then the CJTC gets to do its decertification. So, and we're going to talk on decertification too. Then they created what's called the Office 1267, creates the Office of Independent Investigations. So, we have a contract with Columbia Basin Investigative Team. If we have an officer-involved shooting, CBIT comes down, investigates it. Because they're unbiased, they are not our agency, so it's completely outside of my control. They only give me the result. They don't, and they give me updates. I didn't get any say in how they investigate that officer-involved shooting. Office of Independent Investigations is designed to be a new branch of our government that their task is to investigate all officer-involved shootings initially. And basically, the way it's supposed to work is if I have an officer-involved shooting, I'm supposed to call them immediately, say, hey, we just had an officer-involved shooting. They could say, we'll hold the scene, we'll be there tomorrow. Hold the scene, we'll be there in 3 days. Hold the scene, we're on our way right now. Or they could say, we're too busy, call CBIT. Initially, they're probably going to say, we don't have the capacity to call CBIT. I believe they're going to grow. Now, once they take over, their job is to investigate all officer-involved shootings. Then it's, once they catch up on all of those, it's to look at any previous officer-involved shootings in our state where some new evidence or complaint comes up. Then when they're done with those things, they actually gave themselves the authority to expand their search. What else do they want to investigate? Now that causes me more concern. Keep it on officer-involved shootings. I might be okay until we start seeing who it is that becomes on the investigative team. Part of the investigative team is they cannot be in law enforcement, and they cannot have been in law enforcement in the past 24 months. So they're not cops. They might be retired cops. Okay, so the idea is, obviously, they don't want cops. So that throws a little concern there for me. And the other incidents that they define, that concerns me quite a bit. But that'll really kick up next year, and then they can start expanding it after that. Police duty. Okay. And then they can... Then on 5051, they expanded the CJTC's role in peace officer certifications. So in the past, they can certify me or they can decertify me. Now they can grant, deny, revoke, or suspend my certification. And they can investigate complaints and subpoena and all the other things that a law enforcement agency generally would do. Now the problem, the concern that we have is they don't have to agree with what we come up with. So say I have an officer that misbehaves. We do a disciplinary hearing, a Loudermill hearing. We discipline that officer. We report to the state what we did. The state says, you didn't do enough. Now the problem there is the state can decertify him. I have an officer I can't rediscipline because I already disciplined them. So we're now stuck with an officer that is decertified but on the payroll. That's a concern. We're probably going to really need to renegotiate our contracts and add in, maintain their peace officer certification. So the other piece of that is if the state's decertifying our officers, what does that do to our civil liability? We're saying there's no big deal. They're saying, you know, suspend, decertify. They can even send our officers to remedial training. Now, the one that we all got today, and I'm not happy with it, but every one of us got an email today from the state that we had to take this new training, and it was on peace officer certification. The very last page was a signature block that I had to agree that the state can review without hesitation all or any of my social media accounts anytime they want. I don't have to give them the password, but I have to facilitate it. So that's built into Senate Bill 5051. Now, what are they looking for? Well, when we look at the peace officer certification requirements, there were things like, let me see if I can find it here. I mean, obviously, I don't want people that are felons. The problem is it says commits a felony, but it doesn't matter what the conviction status was. So more likely than not, they committed a crime or they did commit a crime. I mean, the peace officer doesn't get the right of a court in this case. Must revoke, so let me try here. Must revoke, the must revoke was on the certain crimes here. Must revoke on lying. Well, if it's is it proven? I mean, I would hope it's proven that he lied in court. I raise my hand, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. It is the truth. But people make mistakes. So what if I find out that I said something that wasn't quite accurate? I'm going to go back and correct it. But in this case, I will lose my certification. So the officer wanting to go back and correct it may not happen as often. This one at the bottom concerns me. I don't want sexual harassment in this organization. Use of force, it's a may decertify actually. The bottom one, engaged in conduct, including verbal statements, writings, and recordings involving prejudice or discrimination. And I think many of you have actually seen my social media, so I'm not racist. I don't post that stuff either. But if I was to someone was to share it on my page, it could cause me some problems. On or off duty, engaged in any conduct or pattern of conduct that fails to meet the ethical standards required of an officer, disrupts, diminishes, or otherwise jeopardizes public trust in law enforcement, or demonstrates an inability or unwillingness to uphold the officer's oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the U.S. and Washington State. Who decides this is a concern of mine. So I have sworn to protect the Constitution, and I hope that y'all believe I mean that. The problem is, I can't criticize my own government now in this light without them saying, I mean, if I was to come out, okay, and I don't believe this, I actually encourage people to get the COVID vaccine, but if I was to say it's your choice, you shouldn't have to get it, is that breaking trust in law enforcement? If the party line is I should be encouraging people to get it, could that cause me my certification? Yes. So that's where I think we're seeing some problems here. Intentional disregard for the rights of others, okay? I'm not sure what that looks like quite yet, but we'll see. The next piece is, as we start looking personnel files, okay, they get to look at my social media posts anytime they want. But when it comes to our personnel files, $10,000 penalty for failure by an officer or an agency to timely and accurately report info pursuant to the section. So we didn't report that we had this wrongdoing, or we don't report that, you know, we fired somebody. We have to, if I fire somebody, I have to let the state know within 15 days. But if I don't, now they built in a $10,000 penalty. Public complaints. So not only do I have to report it to the state, but any citizen can call and make that same complaint and initiate that certification problem where the officer could lose their certification. That's the end of my presentation. I think I went way over what I wanted to, but any questions so far? So next week, I think we'll hit more into we'll talk the Blake decision, or I'm sorry, next council meeting. We'll talk why drugs are legal now and what we can't do about it. And we'll hit a bunch of these other new bills. So, and then I'll provide you some of the solutions and recommendations. I wish I had more.
So, thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
Chief.
Sure. One of the things that I don't know if you're considering or not is doing a public forum. You had made a statement about the public's going to get real frustrated with you guys. I'd like to see you do a public forum.
I intend to, but I wanted to brief council
and
more than
just Facebook. I think it should be in person.
Yes.
And part of that, I'd like to see, in my opinion, have some council members there. I don't think council members need to speak, but I think it would show that the council's back in our police department. And this isn't something that's being done by you guys. It's not being something that's being done by us. The public needs to understand this is our state legislature that's doing this.
And I hope that council understands. I mean, I as a sheepdog, I as a person that swore to protect this community, I'm trying every way I can to figure out how to work within this to keep our people safe. That we'll see that in some of the solutions we come up with, but educating our community, we're doing them a disservice if we don't. The bad guys out there, the 13-year-old gang members, already know a lot of this. So why shouldn't our law-abiding good citizens know what the conditions are? And I think, I mean, we're doing, like I said, we're doing a disservice not teaching them. Anything else?
Thank you. Item 5 is unfinished business. Council, do you have any unfinished business tonight? I've got 2 items. Tomorrow we're having a meeting with the Port of Othello at 9:15 to discuss the port's property and the city potentially using ARPA funds, but this is just an opening discussion. We'll keep you guys apprised. The second is there's going to be a Park and Rec Committee meeting this Friday at noon. We are going to discuss the field use agreement with the Bombers. And
at noon here?
Yes, at noon here.
What day?
Friday.
Friday?
Friday the 13th.
That's right.
I And then I'll move to new business. Do we have some new business today?
So, all right. I'd like to make a comment to our engineer. He's been doing they're doing the chip sealing here in town. And I got kind of a very, very minor firsthand look at some of the stuff that Sean's been doing. And I gotta say, I got nothing but props to say. He went back and forth between the contractor I work for and them, got us working together, got everything. As far as I could see, everything went really smooth. It looks like they're doing a great job, but the work that he stepped out of his boundaries, or not boundaries, but went above and beyond to get the contractors together and working together. So that's just, thank you. It was very much appreciated. Made my day, two days last week, made my days much easier, and I'm sure it helped with the contractor. So anyway, I just got big props for that. It was very much appreciated.
Thanks.
Yeah. I think it was.
What was used for the selection process of the streets that were being done?
Well, first of all, we focused on streets that have been crack sealed, which the last 2 years we've done crack seal projects. So we wanted the existing asphalt to be sealed and watertight. And then, so we went with three different classifications. We had the really bad streets, which have been listed on our, well, when I started here, were listed on our six-year plan as being streets that we needed to grind up and reconstruct. Problem is, Varela had, I think, $170,000 a block. I think it added up close to $9 million. We don't have that money, which is part of the reason why those streets haven't been addressed for a long time. They were beyond just a simple chip seal, so we did do a two-shot on those, first with a bigger rock, and then the second shot was a smaller rock. Hoping, and we also did a lot of patch to try to smooth those streets out because they've been raveling up. Not perfect, but they're now at least addressed. The second option we did was a full-width chip seal. Those were streets that were cracked up all the way. I mean, they're beyond when they should have got a chip seal. You should probably chip seal about 10 years after a road's built. When they were cracked up all the way to the, you know, much more cracking, we sealed those streets all the way across. The streets that were either due for a chip seal or just slightly over, we just hit the traveled ways, the traveled lanes, and that was so that we could get as many streets addressed as possible. Chip seals are good, but in the parking lanes where cars are parking and turning their wheels, they will over time roll those rocks over and loosen them up. But the chip seals work much better when you're, you know, driving straight forward on them. So we wanted to address as many streets as we could that have been crack sealed. Next year we'll do another large crack seal project and try to we don't have enough money in our budget currently. I'll keep trying to nudge you guys that way, but to do a chip seal every year, we are bringing in about a little over 400,000 a year with our TBD money. We should probably be putting 600,000 a year into our streets, maybe 100,000 for crack seal and 500,000 for chip. So probably be looking at doing a crack seal project every other year and a chip seal project every year to make them big enough that we can get competitive pricing. That's probably more information you wanted. But
when was the last crack seal?
Last year we did a crack seal. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because on Madera Street in Palos Verdes, where it meets, and you know, you talked about it a while back, Corey. It's not bad, but that intersection right there has got better than a half inch. That should be addressed real quick.
So where?
Where Madera and Palo Verdes come together.
Okay. I'll have to.
Yeah, you might want to drive out there because there was a lot of stuff that happened there with the power company and then with our sewer, a lot of stuff that met right there. So it might have settled a little bit. But I think it's better than a half inch. We've got to look at it quick before it gets worse. I noticed that here last week, a couple weeks ago.
Okay. I'll talk with you
Okay, yeah, call me. We can drive out there.
The only reason I mentioned it was because Fur from Broadway to Fourth got done. And that was, I'd never seen anything wrong with that road. It was pretty good blacktop.
Yeah, that street had been crack sealed, and I think it's been more than 10 or 15 years since it was constructed. So
still in pretty good shape, though. But anyway, that's the only reason I brought it up.
Yeah.
And the reason I mention it is they're only 7, 8 years old. We should pay attention to those streets, too, so it don't get too bad, and then it'll be hard to maintain later when it's an easy fix.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just was wondering because I know that over on the on this side of town, there's a lot of streets that are in bad shape going east to west.
I'm not sure which area.
This side of Main Street, the south side of Main Street.
Okay, but further to the west, and those streets mostly haven't been crack sealed. They haven't been crack sealed in the last 2 years. So hopefully those streets will get crack sealed next year and chip sealed the following year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Sean, thank you. I just know that probably the worst street in town was 12th Avenue from Main down a couple of blocks. And I drove it this afternoon or around lunchtime today, and major improvement over what we've had. I really appreciate. I'm sure, the citizens will too. Is that top coat, that fog seal cures and begins to harden and stuff. I know that people are gonna. I know a lot of times they find things to complain about, but in this instance, I don't think you're gonna. I haven't heard really any complaints. People just like to see that work being done. So thank you. Any other new business tonight, council? Well, having no further business, there are no department head reports, so I'll conclude tonight's meeting at 7:37 p.m.